Three, two.
Damn, they got him.
Who's the best show here?
Jack Show!
Who's the best show here?
Jack Show!
All right, that's good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I am short.
Big O! Showtime!
When you were making egg poo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are like it bad. For the stolen quarterback, DSNTS. MIC Challenge, LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, go to Gala, just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 944 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going, man?
All right. We have Joel.
Hello, hello.
And we have Joel.
Good evening.
There we go. Why am I having a hard time with Joe and Joel tonight? I'm going to say Joe, and then I'm going to say
he's
Joel.
Drunk.
And
then that's I say what he Joel. Is. He's
yeah,
drunk.
That's it. That's it.
Have you been drinking?
No. But actually, I had a beer with dinner. That's it. I'm surprised, not surprised at you, Joel. I am surprised at myself that we're going to talk about Slackware 15, and you. I have not even installed it yet, but you have, sir. You have.
I have installed it. I was able to, of course, it's Slackware, so it's going to give you the terminal from by default. By the way. If
of course
you didn't
is.
Know, if you if you're new to this, but then you can enable KDM, and so I have KDM, so it just goes right into KDE Plasma 25th Anniversary Edition, and it has lots of stuff, some really old shit too. Namely,
hold on
Lilo.
One second. Hold on. Oh, okay. So you said Lilo right there. And
right.
Before you got too deep into it, you had a problem.
Yes, I did. I had I don't know if it's secure boot, but UEFI boot was enabled. And it was working fine with Ubuntu and all that. But then I also tried something else too, which I'll talk about later after we're done with Slackware. But when I went to install that, it installed fine. But then it wouldn't boot. So I'm like, well, let's go into the BIOS. And lo and behold, that was set up, UEFI boot. Switched it to legacy boot. And then the other thing I'm going to talk about, booted. And I thought, hey, let's try Slackware. And bingo, bango, bongo, it works fine. So,
now, were you going to say something, Joe?
Okay. Yeah, I know you were having issues installing applications. My question was going to be, couldn't you just install like Flatpak or AppImage make everything else easier?
Wait one second. Hold on. Before we get to that question, because this is a good question, Joe, because I'm going to I'm going to have to deal with that stuff too later on down the line. But my question that I have for all of you is, are any of you on your Linux systems using UEFI? Because I have traditionally turned it off because it's always been a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I turned mine off.
Yeah, I've turned it off on some things, usually my older laptops. Wow. I've had, which are new implementations of the UEFI. But I believe I'd have to actually boot up the other one. I have my yoga book. Has I think I got KDE on it, Kubuntu actually. But I think Kubuntu handled it fine. So I don't know. I don't know why it just wasn't working. Because I installed Ubuntu with that enabled, and I still couldn't boot Kubuntu specifically. But I still couldn't boot the damn thing. I'm like, what the hell happened? So I just disabled that, and I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. It's not like I have Linux on it anyway, so I don't care about Windows and UEFI. Of course, this machine I'm using right now today has UEFI because it's my Windows machine. But mostly because I didn't feel, I was trying to get Slackware to work with Mumble, but we can go into that a little bit there.
So Joe, you say you turn off UEFI, right?
Yeah.
And you just do that to avoid the hassle?
Yes.
So here's my question. I understand the reasoning behind UEFI, but I also asked, you know, I asked the question, and I'm not completely clear on this. How is, realistically, is UEFI going to, like, is it preventing threats from getting to me?
If you have Linux installed.
Well, that's my question. Is this theoretically it's possible, but does UEFI really solve a problem for Linux users? I mean, not from the perspective of, is it better to have more security? Sure, it's better to have more security, but is it just security for the sake of, hey, you have it, so you don't have to worry about it? Is there anything I need to really worry about? Because I've never heard of anything that says I need to worry about it. And also, is it also something in the Windows world that people who don't have this enabled but take all the other precautions, you know, is it really helping people? Has it solved the problem?
I don't think it really has.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure out why they did it in the first place.
Yeah, the only thing it did when it first came out, it was supposed to make more secure. I guess it's supposed to prevent some type of rootkit. But all it really did was brick most dual boots and make it really difficult to install Linux. I mean, if you remember when UEFI first came out,
oh, yeah.
It was super difficult to install Linux on anything that had UEFI. There weren't any UEFI builds for, a few months after UEFI came out?
Yeah, I remember that.
But yeah, it just made things more difficult.
But, I don't ever recall hearing any, any exploit come around the bend where they were like, well, if you had UEFI enabled, this wouldn't be a problem.
It almost feels like it was a security issue for another time. Like, for example, I remember back in the 90s, we had all these viruses that you can just catch right off of a floppy drive. Like, I think wasn't Code Red one of those, and
all was a love one? Is it a,
yeah.
Was it love bug? I don't know.
It's like, who boots off of a floppy anymore? Who swaps floppies much anymore? We may swap like thumb drives, but it's like, I don't know. Still trying to figure it out.
Who even swaps thumb drives that much anymore? Isn't it?
That's true.
People just like, stored up in the cloud now anyway.
Since COVID, but. I mean, that's interesting. So I'll look at my yoga book here in a few, because I got to figure out how to get the damn thing to boot in the BIOS. Because it's not, contrary to popular belief, I don't memorize that shit.
Enough about my UEFI stuff. Continue on, and let's get into Joe's question.
So Slack has, let's just say this, it's
very much its own thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's definitely its own thing, but it's also very old school in a lot of ways. Like, for example, it's using Lilo for the bootloader, which hasn't been used by any major distribution in quite some time now.
It's almost a decade, I think.
Yeah. So that's one. I mean, it installs Grub. You can actually, if I did a reinstall, I may go ahead and choose Grub just because I would like to have maybe Slack and another distro on the same laptop, you know, for a dual boot setup. I don't know.
You could do that with Lilo. It's a little more hands-on, but you could do that.
But some of the old school stuff that it does have that I really appreciate, though, is it has XMMS still installed by default.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is, yeah, and it's great. I forgot how good it was. You know, it's a very old school way of listening to music. You know, you have to have your MP3 files and things like that. But, you know, for guys like us who grew up with this shit, you know, well, got our Linux chops back in the day when XMMS really was a thing, you know, we're used to it. You know, it's not, you're not streaming stuff. Although you could stream stuff too. Like, I think certain streams you can plug into XMMS. I think I remember used to use XMMS to listen to the show back when we were on BinRev, if I remember right. But
yeah, you could do that.
But yeah, so it's like I said, the KDE desktop, just like KDE on pretty much any of the other Linux distros, it's nothing major. It has a lot of stuff installed by default that probably is not installed on Ubuntu, and that's because that's the way it was back in the day. Back in the day, you just installed everything, even if you didn't need it. That's not the case. Ubuntu is actually slimmer install with that regard, but there's a lot less extra systems and stuff that come up by default with Slackware. The other thing too is if you just did the old school install everything kind of install, which I kind of did and I kind of didn't, the only thing I didn't install was XFCE desktop. I wanted the KDE Plasma. I guess you could have installed Fluxbox or something else if you really wanted to. But
you chose not to install them?
To not install XFCE, correct.
Wait. Yeah, what kind of install? Like, there's a couple of different ways that you can do the install. Right. Like, you could just do everything, or you could choose certain categories, or you can go through and pick the individual packages. So which one did you do? I'm taking it you went the middle ground, right?
Yeah, kind of the middle ground, where I had everything but the XFCE stuff. I mean, I didn't want that. I only wanted one desktop. I didn't need to have two desktops. So one kind of pleasant surprise is as soon as I got into the KDE desktop, I saw this little HP logo in the bottom, and it automatically had the HP printer utility. Opened that up, added my printer, no problems, which was really slick. You know, that's important on that is by default CUPS doesn't install, so you got to make sure you select CUPS, and I did that at the get-go at install time. So and you can choose, like, there's lots of places where you can choose everything, you know, choose little pieces, parts, like, you know, do you really need to have INetD loaded? Probably not. This won't be systemd. I guarantee you that. I don't think it's a traditional init that we were used to back in the day. So everything's in a text file, which is kind of nice on that regard. Not that I've messed with the init system much yet, but because I just really did the install yesterday, it went pretty quick. It didn't take too long to install it. You do have to, when you first boot in, you just type in root, enter, no password, and it just, dumps you right in the command prompt. So really nice, because you probably want to go ahead and cf disk and set up your disk, you know, so delete any partitions you had on there and put the fresh partitions for Slackware. It was an ISO, but they used Balina Etcher to create a thumb drive off of it, and then booted into the off of thumb drive on the laptop, And as you're doing the installation, you don't want to choose DVD for the source because that's not what you're using. You actually choose USB. So even though it's the same thing, it's just literally the same thing. It's on the ISO. So, but then it's, you know, you set those minor things up. It doesn't even set up a user, your normal user. It just sets up a root password, and you're there. You go. You're responsible for setting up your own user. You're responsible for setting up sudo if you want to use it, and I like using sudo. Not that my root password is any different than my user password. You know, it's a laptop. It's very much probably more server oriented than it is desktop oriented, but it works very fine as a desktop. It's very fast. At least that's what I found. So, but going back to talk about software installation, Mumble's not in the default repos. It's not installed by default. So I found a package and did a slap package install. And I come to find out when I try to open Mumble, it gives me a dependency issue. And what is that? Let me see. I think I have more than one terminal open here. It doesn't even launch. Says error while loading shared libraries libprotobuf.so.23 cannot open shared object file, no such file or directory. So I figured, well, I gotta install the protobuf libraries. Probably it got some others too. That's kind of one annoying thing.
But how did you get it on there again?
I just found a package. I just searched for Mumble Slack package. Oh. And yeah.
Well, that would explain I just it. Down, you probably need to
basically
get...
just did go through any of the dependencies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slack isn't as nice as Debian or Debian based or even RPM based ones where that if you have a stray RPM or Deb you pull down, that it will go ahead and when you install it, like when you do apt install package, it will grab all the dependencies. Slack doesn't do that unless you're going everything from Slack package. So so I did some research. I added the Slack package plus repos in there, so I got them in there. I also added the Alien Bob ones. I don't know how familiar you are anymore with Slack, but there's multiple repos, very similar to how Ubuntu has PPAs. So Slack can do that. But then I still haven't been able, and that was kind of like just a few minutes before the show. But other than that, there are instructions for installing straight up Google Chrome instead of Chromium. So that's what I did, is I did a Slack build and created a Slack package with Google Chrome and installed it right away. Talking about using something like Flatpak, Slack isn't set up for Flatpak by default, and it's got the same issues as trying to get Mumble installed, getting all the dependencies for Flatpak installed. Otherwise, there is a Flatpak for Mumble, so... and that's probably going to be the best way, is if I can get Flatpak going on there. What's the other one?
Slack package. Wait.
Slack snap. Package. No, snapped. Slack. Snap. Thank you.
Oh, you mean for Slackware? There's Slack builds.
Yeah, there's Slack builds. Which that is basically just taking the way it worked for Chrome was I downloaded the deb in a Slack build file, ran a command, and it tore apart the deb and made it into a Slack package. So, and it installed with no issues. No dependencies or anything like that either. So, yeah, the Flatpaks or the unified packages, trying to make it easier. Slack doesn't support any of that. You can install Flatpak dependencies so that you can use Flatpaks on it. I haven't figured out how to do it yet. So Hopefully I can, but because yeah, I actually really like those, it.
I figured with those universal ones, yeah, you'd have the initial difficulty of getting Flatpak or Snap right. or App Image installed, getting all the dependencies there. Yep. But once you got that done, then
everything
future,
could be installed.
Yeah,
right.
Future installations would become that much easier.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, I didn't even look, I didn't even search through Slack packets to see if they had the cloud stuff like Ansible or Jenkins or stuff like that installed. Or even Node.js for that matter, you know. But from a general desktop, I'm all set. You know, the only thing that I really want to get installed on it is Mumble, get it completely working. But I got Chrome HexChat installed by default for IRC. What else we got on it? Oh, it's got a whole bunch. If your kids were still young, you'd probably like the education menu there, Dan, old boy. John, Joe, you might like that.
Is that the KDE education stuff?
I think so. Like Articulate, Blinken, Cantor, K-Algebra, K-Algebra Mobile, K-Bruck, KDE Marble, K-Geography, K-Hangman, K-Stars, blah, blah, blah. You know all those ones.
Right.
The games, it has Blinken, Bomber, Bovo, a whole bunch of different games and installs. Mostly are the simple games, you know, like K-Blocks or K-Breakout, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Graphics, GIMP's installed, something called GQuy. I don't know. I haven't used it before. Gwenview, K Color Chooser, K Ruler, Carbon, Color Paint, Contrast, Krita, Ocular, Scanlight, Development, CMake, Cervisa, Cuttlefish, which is the editor, Data Display Debugger, Emacs, GTK Demo, Glade, Icon Browser, Joe's Own Editor. Which I had never heard before.
Oh, I know a lot of people swear by Joe.
Yeah, and Joe's Own Editor, Emacs version. Chrome apps. Must have installed a few Chrome apps. It says ADB for Chrome, Google Keep. Which I do use Google Keep quite a bit. Internet things. Aggregator. Oh, I use Network Manager for setting up the Wi-Fi. Contact Print Theme Editor. Contact Theme Editor. Falcon. Firefox. Chrome. Well, that's because I'd installed Chrome. HexChat. Internet Radio, which I assume that's a live internet streaming thing. KDE Connect. KDE Connect SMS. And KGET. Multimedia has Audacious, Dragon Player, Easy Tag, Eliza, Juk. I never heard of Juk before. K3B, KMix, Camoso, Kden Live, and Kid3 and Kid3-QT. Office has Caligra Gemini, Caligra Sheets, basically the Caligra suite. Contact, that's something I mentioned before. K address book, K mail editor, K mail header theme editor, and K mail itself, K my money, and K organizer, and then the setting stuff, which is kind of just boring. So it's done that setting stuff, I'm not going to read through, but that's everything that I've got installed. Of course, Kate is also on here, as well as Dolphin for the file manager. But amazingly enough, it didn't have any Slackware wallpapers. So I had like the standard KDE wallpapers. I just downloaded one off of... I found a cool one on Reddit and I put it on there. So it has a Slackware wallpaper because that's appropriate for me. But not having used Slackware all that much, Dan's probably used it far more than I have. I like it. I mean, it's not too bad. It's not for the faint of heart. So if you're new to Linux, don't go here.
Unless you really want to learn how to
exactly, right?
You know how it all works.
I guarantee you, you're going to have a much better time on Fedora, Ubuntu, Kubuntu, any of the Ubuntus, even Debian. You're going to be better. And Debian used to be a pain in the ass to get installed. So even Debian's far more easier to get up and rolling and has far more packages built by default. I would say that even of Arch too, and Arch is a little bit more of a technical distribution than Debian or the Ubuntu's or Fedora. So, Manjaro is like, if you want to do Arch, Manjaro is the way to do it. In my opinion, anyway, I like Manjaro.
Yeah, Manjaro makes Arch easy.
Yes, that's the thing.
Manjaro gets called the Linux Mint of Arch.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I've never used Manjaro. I've just always stuck with just pure Arch.
Yeah.
I might try anything against it.
Right. I might try a Manjaro next, just because one of the things I did like about Manjaro was the AUR. Which is fantastic.
I mean, you can use that in Slack and just in Arch. Sorry, Arch.
Well, true. Yeah. Well, actually, what, there's AUR and there's something else. What's the other one that's on there? There were some other ones, yeah. But if you really want to learn Linux in the old school way, and, you know, just like Slack has been ever since I've known it, install was completely textual, all running in curses. Our good friend Dave Yates would love it. It's a big deal, though. It's the first new Slackware version in 10 years, I think.
I think it's 6 or 7.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But it did have me doing some other research on some of the old stuff that I remember from back in the day, like, well, XMMS, and it was replaced by XMMS2, but I never could find, it looks like the XMMS2 project is dead too, but I guess everybody just listens to their music in a browser now with streaming. Yeah.
I have XMMS2 installed, and like, I can't remember how to get it running.
Well, it was never. I think the problem with XMMS2 was it just got to be trying to do too much. You know, instead of just trying to be a media player, they were building like the infrastructure for something more, and I don't think it really got that far. You know, I know you can run it as, you know, you can use it. It's more like a standard X app. It's not pretty looking like XMMS always was, and I think one of the things that made XMMS cool back in the day was the fact that you can use Winamp skins on it. And Winamp itself is dead too, so.
Yeah.
But brought back a lot of memories dinking with it, trying to make things work. You know, it's definitely not as convenient as throwing in a Ubuntu stick on your laptop, booting off that, installing it, and, you know, you're going to have yourself. If you're at all used to Debian or Ubuntu, you're going to have yourself set up in like 5-10 minutes after it boots up. You know, unless you need something specific.
You know what my problem with XMMS2 is? Is now, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a long time since I ran XMMS. But when I ran XMMS in the past, I would type in XMMS and it would come up. And you would have XMMS, the graphical client, everything, correct?
The old XMMS, yeah.
Like XMMS 2 is a client server model now, and I forgot. I thought I had this running at one time. I don't know how to start it, because if you just type in XMMS 2, it's a command line thing, and I'm like, oh, you know, that's great, but I'd like to have like see the old graphical thing, and it looks like you can do it, but you go to like look at in Google at XMMS, I can't find any damn documentation for the thing.
Right.
Like how? Now I do see that there's a GitHub page and a tutorial on it, but it's a tutorial for writing XMMS clients, and I'm like, doesn't it have a client? I don't know. Anyway, it's yeah. I wish they made it easier. Oh wait, is that the website xmms.org? Why is that not coming up as like number one in Google? And might not be coming up because I don't think that website exists anymore. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joel. Joe.
What? Yep.
Well, I think I talked about all I want to do about Slack. I do have one other topic along the same lines. Google has, within the last week, released something called Chrome OS Flex. And basically, it's a way to turn an old laptop into a Chromebook. And I don't mean Chromium OS. It's Chrome OS.
Is that any different from Chromium OS?
It's got all the Google stuff on it. You know, the only difference with that in like a real Chromebook is that the Chromebook will like you go buy a Chromebook today, most of them I think will run Android apps. This will not. But I still liked it for the limited amount of time I played with it. You know, it's just not something that I would use for an extended basis. It might be handy for those who have an old laptop and their kid's Chromebook died and they need to get logged in for classwork.
Or to keep using really, really old hardware.
Yep, until it completely dies.
Yeah. Hand it off to a kid and watch it get destroyed eventually.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, for my part, let's see. Did I talk about that Dell XPS 13 9350 last time?
A little bit. That you picked up and you had no, it did not have any memory or SSD in it.
It didn't have the SSD or the LAN card in it.
Okay.
But the memory is soldered to the board. No, I think I went through some of the testing last time, but after the show, I did some further testing.
Yeah, you said you were getting like almost no voltage into it or out of it.
Yeah, there was like 5 volts on one of the rails, and there was 20 volt draw. So something was happening, but it wasn't turning on, and it wasn't charging the battery. And I had tried a different battery, and it was the same thing. I went around with my voltmeter and checked all the capacitors. And then when I got to the capacitors that were around the CPU, they were all shorted, which means that the CPU is faulty. So I did end up ordering another motherboard for it just because I always wanted an XPS 13. So
How much was the motherboard?
That
should
be here hopefully this weekend, and I'll put that together. And then what I'm going to do is I have a heat gun. I have flux. I'm going to see if I can just reflow that CPU and make it work. I don't think it's going to work, but I'm going to give it a shot on the old one. And even if that doesn't work, the new one will.
So wait, did the motherboard, the new motherboard, you got a new motherboard, right?
I ordered a new motherboard. It has not arrived yet.
And does that include a CPU on it?
Yes.
Oh, it's a solid. That's right. And how much was that?
160.
Okay.
Not horrible.
And then the I paid $100 for it originally, and the screen is about worth that much. But it's gonna be a little high for, you know, a not new laptop. But like I said, it's, you know, always been on my wish list, so now I'll have one.
Speaking of laptops, I received my work replacement laptop on Monday. It is a 2019 MacBook Pro.
Complete and with touch bar.
Hold on a second, Joel. I got to give him a little bit of credit, all right? I have to give him a little bit of credit. I don't know why this wasn't the original design of the touch bar. Like, this keyboard, this 2019 Mac has a proper escape key on it. And that, for me, makes all the difference. It's not part of the touch bar. I don't know what.
No, 2019. It's not the M1.
So not
it's a MacBook Pro 2019. And now this type is too small for me to read it. MacBook Pro 16. No, if it's 2019,
it is definitely not the M1.
No, it's not.
It's going to have an Intel chip.
So it's got a proper power button on and a proper escape key. And, you know, I prefer the function keys to that touch bar, but my main gripe with the touch bar was the fact that there wasn't a proper escape key, and when you tried to use the escape key on the touch bar, it wasn't in the right place. It was just off by a little bit where you're used to an escape key. And then there's no tactile feedback on the touch bar, so I sometimes like hit it and I don't know whether I hit the escape key or it worked or not, and it's just I've always found it awful. But the new laptop seems to be great, seems like it's running great. I like the keyboard a little bit better. Unfortunately, I have not been able to do anything with it because I'm still awaiting the proper access that I need to get the software installed on I have to install. Like, all the approvals are in. I'm just waiting for whoever has to flip that switch to give me what I need to get takes care of that. And so I don't know. Everybody I've talked to said, yeah, they had to wait like a week for that to happen. I thought I was going to head that off by doing a couple of things in parallel and getting that ball rolling before I even got the laptop. But it doesn't look like it's going to be the case, unfortunately. I mean, but other than that, it seems pretty nice. Would I buy it? Hell no.
Would you buy an M1?
I would not buy an Apple. Okay. And I would not buy an Apple laptop or anything again. Did it once, and that's it.
So did I. But yeah, I would buy one again, but I just can't. I can't justify the cost for what they want for them.
I wouldn't buy an M1, but if I could find like an older one, something made after 2012, for a decent price, like an extremely low price, I'd buy it and put Linux on it just to say that I did.
But it's like this, I saw a decently priced, questionable Apple IIc on eBay, And I will not bid, especially on something I'm not sure that works, that I'll have to do some repair work on. And I bid like 125 on it. Yeah, that's you know, something that old I don't mind doing repair work on, because it's actually, I can actually see the shit. But yeah, it went above 125, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done. You know, plus they wanted to charge $30 shipping, which I can kind of understand that. But if I were to buy an old retro Apple II system like that, it would definitely be the 2C, mostly because I have a case for it. I got a case from when I was in Scouts at the 85 Boy Scout Jamboree. So I just would love to be able to have that all together just for once to see what it would look like and how it would feel. I've used the app. That Apple II is one of the first computers I've ever used. So
same here. But I think that's pretty much, you know, most people's first
that are our age.
Usage.
Yeah.
Well, I would say our age, but I'm considerably younger than you. And prettier.
Yeah. Hey, you just got a beard. And weigh a few pounds less than I do.
I wasn't going to mention weight. Because I look pretty good at 265.
I got something else this week. My phone came last Thursday. Pixel 6 Pro, 512 gigabytes, Android 12.
Yeah, I forgot it didn't come before the show, but I remember you told me about it. No, it didn't.
It came Thursday, yeah. Has to have one of the best cameras I've ever had on an Android phone. It just does. It's got the night sight feature they started with the Pixel 3. I think yours has that too, I think.
Yeah, it has night sight on there.
So it takes really good pictures in low light. I'm not exactly keen on...
What was the overall cost? Not including trade-in or anything, just the overall base cost.
Trying to think how much... Mine was... I think it was 1,000, I think. It was cheaper than my older phone was, which I have yet to send back yet. Mostly because the strangest thing was is that, you know, they sent me the phone, the charger, and the case all in one box. But later on, like after I activated this phone, they sent out another box which has the envelope to sending the old phone back to them. I'm like, okay. And yeah, you're sending them your phone, your old phone, in an envelope. So it's like, well, good luck getting it in one piece, but. but whatever. So, but generally, I really like the case. I got the standard Google case because it was relatively cheap. The Google doesn't really rape you too much, not like Apple, when you have to buy chargers and accessories. And I do recommend, if you don't have a 30-watt charger, buy at least one, either the Google one. Or I have another one I bought that was like $10 cheaper on Amazon. It was just, I think it listed the Pixel 6 Pro or Pixel 6 in the listing. But as long as it's 30 watts, it does seem to charge it at the faster rate. Kind of one interesting feature that it has... you can turn it off, but it has what they call adaptive charging. So in the evening, when you plug it in, it usually only happens in the evening, is when you plug it in, it'll tell you your phone will be 100% charged at 7 in the morning. So even though it could probably charge it up faster, even on some of my other chargers, it extends that out. So that kind of helps
preserve the life of the battery.
Yeah, that's the idea anyway. So, I have there's a quick tap app action I have set up in mine, which if I just double tap on the back of the phone, it will do a screenshot, which is kind of handy. All the things like on my, I've long been a Google Photos user because I love the fact that it just automatically will upload any picture I take on the phone at the Google Photos. On my Samsung, I would always get like a, like when you try to edit a picture and save it, it would ask for permissions every single time. That doesn't happen on the Pixel 6 Pro. So it probably doesn't happen for your Pixel 5A. Yeah, the 5A, I think. So I think probably doesn't happen on yours either. I think it has to do with the differences between Samsung and Google in their security. But, of course, we have the Tensor chip in it. And this thing is just blazing fast. I have it set. The screen will go up to 120 hertz refresh rate, but I have it set so it's an adaptive one. So it'll run most of the time in 60 hertz, but if it needs 120, it'll ramp up the refresh rate automatically. And I highly recommend going with that because you will get a little bit longer battery life. I have yet to flatten it. But then I haven't been away for more than a few hours anyway, which is kind of normal for me. So what will probably really be the tell is if, like, when I go on vacation or something like that, if we're out most of the day, then we'll see how that how the battery life or life will go to Linux Fest or something. So, but I'm really pleased with it. I highly recommend it. It's a great phone. And oh, one thing to add to, everyone saw the camera hump and kind of cringed at it. Once you put the standard default Google case on it, it makes the camera hump a moot point. Just lays nice and flat in my both on my desk and when I'm in my car, because the car has the wireless charging pad in the middle console. So that's my fun purchase in Adventures of Slackware.
Cool.
So Dan will have to tell us about setting the rest of his work laptop up when he finally gets all the software.
Yeah, as soon as they give me the admin access.
And how he's switching everything he has over to Mac. Selling all his computers and buying all Macs.
And, the earlier UEFI question, my Lenovo YogaBook 710 has UEFI and Secure Boot enabled. And it's running Kubuntu just fine.
Well, that's Ubuntu, baby, for you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you have to jump through hoops every time there's a kernel update?
Nope.
No, not anymore?
Nope.
You don't have to re-sign?
Nope.
One of the things, to go back to an earlier discussion about not buying an Apple product. One of the things I always hated when I would run Linux on a Mac was the command and option key and all that fiddling around with messing with those things. I hated that. I want my keyboard to be a keyboard like I used to.
Or the open Apple and closed Apple.
Yes, it's got to be different, you know. I'll stick with other non Apple products from now on. Yeah.
Well, I just look at it at those as like, okay, we have on typical Intel laptops that are designed to come with Windows. You have a Alt key and a Windows key. The Open Apple is the equivalent to the Windows key for me.
God, I love the Granted. Windows key, right?
Yeah. It was a good idea when they came out with it. And a lot of Linux distros take advantage of it, too. Like, if I hit the Windows key on my Slackware box, up comes the KDE menu.
I think all of them.
Yeah, most of them do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have all the shortcuts that Windows may have, but has a fair amount of them.
I mean, it works for me on Ice Window Manager right now.
Yep.
My friend brings up that Ice Window Manager window.
That's one thing I made. Reminds me. I don't know why that reminded me, but on my Pixel 6 Pro, the one thing that it kind of annoys me is I'll admit it. I play a little bit of Candy Crush just because I like that kind of a game. It's kind of mindless and nice and relaxing.
I can't say anything. I play Ball Breaker.
Yeah. But anytime you have like an action in the game where you need to swipe it and it's near the edge because of the gesture-based navigation, the game will say, "Hey, are you sure you want to stop playing the game?" And I'm like, "No, I want to continue to play the game." I think I can turn on the icons on the bottom by default. It's not that way. I'm very used to not having the icons on the bottom, but Samsung's gestures are a little bit different. They have three little areas at the bottom of the screen where you can do gestures at least on my old Note. You don't have that with the Pixel 6 Pro. It's just a swipe from the right, and then you have the swipe and hold on the bottom to bring up the application switcher. But it's kind of annoying when I'm playing a game.
It's a swipe to the right?
Yes.
And then a hop to the left?
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
Put your hands on your hips?
Yeah.
And move your feet inside? Then do you do the pelvic thrust?
Ooh. Oh, and a lot of the
people... And really drive insane?
Yeah. A lot of people complained about like the fingerprint reader on this. It's just as fast as on my Note 10, and some of the other issues. I think they patched a lot of the issues, so at least by the time I got one, ever since my Pixel 2, Verizon has been absolutely wonderful getting software and security updates out. I have no complaints. I know that for a fact that the Pixel 6 Pro will get the updates the same day as AT&T or T-Mobile subscribers. So, Verizon's not as much of a dick as they used to be.
Yeah. Dicks.
Eat a bag of dick.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, the one thing I'm still trying to figure out, we talked about this on a show we did Sunday with my friend Chris Spera, and we got like four guys. We do the iTech Gear Weekly. And for whatever reason, Microsoft has chosen to require an Office 365 or a Microsoft account in order to use Windows 11 Pro, which makes absolutely no sense.
Why not?
Yeah. Why doesn't it make sense?
Why not, right? Why not?
Well, I mean, consider that if the enterprise is going to roll out Windows 11, you're probably, depending on, I guess you can be using Office 365, so that will qualify. But if you're not just using a straight up domain controller on your own network, yeah, you really don't want that. I mean, I guess they may have an enterprise option that you can turn that off, but I'm not about to pay for a Windows 11 Pro because I'm still trying to figure out if I did that, what would it buy me? You know, the only reason I even want Windows is because I want to run Creative Cloud and I don't want to buy a Mac. So, well, that, and I kind of like playing some of the games too.
Wait, what are the versions of Windows? Is there still a home version?
Yes.
I'm sure there is.
And there's, yes, a, pro, there's a home version.
But is it the S version?
Yeah, the S version. Is that lower than home?
Yes. The S version, the big difference is that it only lets you install applications out of the Microsoft Store.
That's right.
So it's the new RT?
Yeah, except it's not, well, not necessarily ARM only, but it's like I saw an article the other day, it says, you can run full Windows on the Surface Duo phones, and I'm like, why would you want to do that?
Because you like it slow.
Well, he said well, it's nice and convenient to have a full-fledged Windows machine with you. I'm like, laptops aren't that heavy. You know, if you really, really, really want something like that, go get a GPD.
Win.
I forget the model. Yeah, the GPD Win, yeah. In fact, they got versions of that that actually have serial ports on it. So if you're a network guy, you need to dink around with the firmware on your company's routers. There you go. But now, hopefully, I don't have a problem with this laptop because I went and booted it up this morning and it gave me a smart error.
What was the smart error?
Your hard drive failing. Dead.
That's what it's saying. Okay. So even though I ran diagnostics once I got booted in the Windows and they found no errors, no issues, and it's been performing just fine. So I chat online with Asus support and say, hey, you know, what do I do? And he sends me this link that goes to a page that says disable smart checking. And I'm like, this doesn't really give me the warm and fuzzies, but I'm like, okay. That made the message go away.
Is it still under warranty? Is it still under warranty?
Fine.
Is it still under warranty? And that's what they told you to do under the warranty. You call them up and they tell you to.
Yeah, I may call them back.
Just ignore these errors on your hard drive until after the warranty's up, please.
Well, the upside is it's still working fine. So smart, to me, smart can be a little bit overkill.
Not while it's under warranty.
That's true. Sorry, Luke decided he needed to come up and pass gas in my office.
Yeah.
Well, that's where you pass gas.
Not always.
You know what? I don't feel sorry for you, Joel.
Yeah, well, you know what? I've been trapped in an elevator with your fucking stench.
You know what? I'll tell you what. You're right. I have bad gas. And you know who I feel sorry for? I feel sorry for my wife. Because my gas has been so bad.
That's
lately.
What she said last week.
She said, and like, I said to her, it was Lillian's birthday this on Monday, and she had a little party, and there was cake, and
all the stuff your stomach's not used to.
Yeah, all cake, and then the next couple of days later, so it wasn't a party. It was her actual birthday. She wanted oven fried chicken, and it's bad enough. Like chicken skin gives me massive gas, and then add into that, Paige made her a cake that was oh my god, it was so rich. So
gluten free.
No, it wasn't gluten-free. No, it was not gluten-free. And it was so... It was... I looked at her making. I'm like, gosh, she had 2 pints of heavy cream that was involved in it. I mean,
dear
this thing...
God.
And it was really, trust me, it was really good, because it's kind of like the way they make it down at the bakery that she works at. And she did a fantastic job. The frosting was really good. It was, for how heavy it should have been, it was really light. I mean, it was so easy to eat. That was a big problem. And I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I said, we got to tell the kids now. Don't be surprised if you don't wake up in the morning. If we wake up and find you dead because I killed you.
You must be lactose intolerant.
I'm not, you know, a little bit. Now, I will say this. When 2 weekends ago, or was it 3 weekends ago, when I had the worst time, the worst I got with the COVID, my oldest daughter was down on the couch. Oh, no, wait. Yeah, my youngest daughter was in her room, and my wife said she felt so trapped in that bedroom because my gas was like one of the top five it's ever been, to, in her opinion, as that bad, and she couldn't escape. She had nowhere to go. Like, there was no... she said, I couldn't even go downstairs and sleep on the couch. It was... there's no place for me to go. She just had to stuff it out. But, and you know what? And that's all okay, because you know why, Joel? Because
she'll gas you out the next day.
Because I did something for my wife. Now, of course, it benefited me too. But for the past couple of weeks, maybe about a month, when I'm working, I've noticed that my internet has been absolutely terrible. And my wife... last week around Thursday, I think it was complaining that she was trying to get her schoolwork done, and it was just so awful. It was disconnecting for her all the time. She couldn't get to the videos, couldn't do all these things. And I noticed that I was having some problems too. And no matter what I did, it really didn't make a difference. Now I come down here and I test out my Linux machines, and there's no problem. So it's the Wi-Fi that's having issues, and I can see it, you know, I can see it, because if I go to ping Google on my Wi-Fi, it's going up to like into the hundreds and you know, medium to high hundreds of hundreds, and it'll time out sometimes. And then if I just try that from my laptop down here that's connected to, wired into it, and it's just no problem at all whatsoever. So I was pretty sure that the wireless has been going flaky for a while. So I got a new wireless router. I wanted to get an access. I thought about getting an access point, because that's pretty much what I just need up there, is an access point. And after doing like a bunch of research and reading stuff, and I didn't want to spend an arm and a leg. And one of the kickers on there, as I was reading, a lot of people were talking about all the setup for this thing. You know, you kind of have to subscribe. Like, initially, to get the setup working properly, you have to create an account on that company's service or whatever. You don't have to use it. And I didn't want to do that. So I bagged looking at the access points, and I looked at the wireless routers, and I hate kind of doing the research for this, because I start looking at, you know, different specs, and I'm like, okay, let me see what some people are saying for reviews, and like, the reviews can be all over the place. Like, you get the 1-star review where the guy is like, I this arrived, or it never arrived to my house, and so I'm giving it 1-star. It's like,
that's useful.
Yeah, that's not, you know, or like, I plugged it in and it didn't work, so that's 1-star. Okay, that's great. I mean, that stinks. You didn't actually... I understand why device. You might be. Yeah, so you didn't, and then other people were like, oh, this is great, and then some people were like, it sucks, and then other people were like, it's great. And then when I try and go out and do like pick a couple of models and look at the reviews on a couple of models, There's so many of these aggregate sites where they're just aggregating the Amazon reviews that I could have read myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hate that. So eventually, after looking at a bunch of stuff, I was like, all right, reasonably priced, the TP-Link AC1900 Wi-Fi router. I have another TP-Link here that I use as for my own use in case I have problems with the regular Wi-Fi router and I need to work or people are hogging shit up there. I can connect down to this one and I usually get better results.
I tend to pick routers that have multiple bandwidth or, you know, multiple antennas.
Yes.
So that way it's got like two antennas dedicated to the 5 gigahertz range. I can dedicate one of those strictly to myself.
Yes. And this has it. My other ones didn't. My other one didn't. So this has three antennas on it. And I believe it has that capability where I could dedicate, and then I could also set up a private one on there that only I could access to. But I haven't done that. And you know, long story short, I got it. I plugged it in my laptop, my Linux laptop on here, plugged it in, and you know, I don't use it for anything other than Wi-Fi. Everything gets passed through to my, I'm using the, U-Link for, DHCP, and that's my router. This is just wireless access point. So I went in and I connected straight up to the Ethernet with my laptop, and I shut off my laptop, the Wi-Fi on my laptop, and it picked it up. I got into the admin interface, really simple, straightforward to set up. Went through, set it all up. Everything was working. And then I decided to poke around in the interface a little bit longer and discovered that it had two modes. There's a router mode and a access point mode, which I could switch it to, which I was like, well, that's exactly what I want, an access point. So I switched it to that, and then I had, then it like reset itself. So I had to go through the whole setup again. And that wasn't too difficult. What did get to be a little bit of a pain in the ass, though, was once I had it set up, and this wasn't, you know, the Wi-Fi router's problem. Once I had that set up, I had to go then reset up, reconnect my, I left the old access point up there. So the old router is still working and the new one is in there. But I wanted to switch my printer over to the new one. And given that that is, you know, I couldn't remember what the IP address was of the printer, and I was kind of taking the lazy way out of it instead of having to come down here and fire up the U-Link to find out, you know, get the MAC address and find out what the IP address is off the DHCP client list. I tried using the HP tools to do it, and it was a little flaky for some reason. I don't know why I was having a problem with it. But I eventually got it working and switched it over, so that wasn't too bad. But I'm happy with the TP-Link AC1900 router, wireless router. So a big difference. I'm happy with it so far. It's been great. Once this thing's been in place and I switched it over, world of difference. I'm my day to day work from home, it's been the way I expect it to be, or it's just working great. Yeah, it works great. My wife has been happy with it. I switched the PlayStation 5 over to it. I let my youngest daughter know that, you know, the new address and everything. And then I left everybody else on the old one. Fuck them.
Perfect.
That's right. If they don't like it, they can get the hell out of here and get their own place. Pay for their own.
Learn to pay some freaking rent.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what time,
I say.
Huh?
Yeah. That's what I say. I say, well, get
that,
the hell
it's
out
good
of
that
here.
You, I was going to say, it's good you picked, like, the TP-Link, because I've had some discussions with others about routers recently, and one, I think the Eero, E-E-R-O, which is used to be its own mesh network router, but then Amazon bought it.
Okay.
They have no web interface for the router itself, so you couldn't set it up using Linux. You'd have to set it up using a phone app, which...
Yeah, probably I've seen a couple where you have to have a phone app, and I've seen a couple where you have to like go out to their website,
right,
and log back into your stuff to make it work,
right,
or to make changes.
As I say, I love how Asus does it, which I mean, I can still visit the local page, but then there's also an app as well. So, and if I have the alternative, I want to have both,
yeah,
just because you know sometimes. Sometimes, well, actually, one thing I've discovered with specifically with the Asus app is that there's some things you can't do in the app that you have to do in the web interface.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to think if there's one specific. I can't think of anything specific with my router, but I have seen that before. So, and other things like
I have the Asus.
Yeah, there's a good one. It's not something you guys would have, but my alarm.com system has an app on my phone, and then it has, of course, you have the display downstairs, and then you also can log into the system via the web. There's certain things that I can't do on the app that I have to do via the web. And it's annoying as hell. Because the last thing I want to do is go upstairs to hop on a laptop, because that's usually where all my laptops are.
You don't have a computer in like every room of the house?
I could, but my wife would shoot me. She'd be like, "Hey, can you have it?" Like I've had like a stack of papers sitting on one of the little end tables that we have in the living room. And she just scooped them all up and stuffed them in one of those cubes. And I'm like, "Where'd you put all this? I put it over there. I don't want that paper sitting out." I'm like, "Well, nobody's coming to visit." I'm like, "What the hell?" I'm like, she's very much a woman who doesn't like clutter. So, but, oh, it's awful, but.
Well, you can fix that by having more kids.
No, we're done with that.
Have like three more kids, like adopt or something.
That's the only way I could get more kids. I don't want more kids.
3 to 6 years old, and trust me, she'll get over that clutter bothering her thing.
Yeah.
Quickly.
We still haven't done anything. Luke's car, the light went out and it hasn't come back on, and I'm not complaining. So we still haven't really done anything to replace that car yet. Probably a good thing. We're waiting a little bit. Since hopefully the prices will come down a little bit.
I got an estimate on, readjusting the foundation of my house today.
Uh-oh, that's not going to be cheap.
$7,500, which is a little less than I was thinking it was going to be, but still fun to come up with.
It's not as bad as I thought. But yeah, I thought it was going to be like between 10 and 20.
Yeah.
But all right.
Yep.
Oh, and
how long is that going to take?
Yeah, they said they'll do it in a day.
Huh.
It'll take me longer to get all the funding together.
And on more hard drive news, one of the drives that was hanging off of my open media vault decided it was going to eat the file system. I was able to resuscitate it and put another file system on it. So it's right now it's empty, but I'm not sure if I'm going to write much to it. Because methinks it's a little bit flaky. It's an older drive, too. I got it at...
Yeah, once you start having problems with a drive... Best to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's time for me to buy a freaking one bigger one and consolidate some things a little bit, you know? at least put the primary copy on the big fat one and have the little ones be my backup copies. I haven't checked. I don't think I had anything in MB using that drive, so that's probably fine. I know all my music was fine because I just copied it down to my Slackware laptop and I had XMMS playing some music while I was working today. Bings, that's a blast from the past. It's one of the better media players I ever had. Of course, I don't remember. You remember we were trying to play DVDs on Linux, Dan?
Oh, yeah. You had to get, DVD CSS or whatever that was?
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember.
DVD Crab.
Was it OSM Player? I forget what the name of the player, the best one that there was. But now I don't even care. I mean, I still have DVDs and I have some Blu-rays, but I just hook it up to my TV if I want to watch it, or I'll rip it.
I really don't have any CD, DVD, Blu-ray drives hooked up to anything.
I have one, but it's a USB-based one and stuck in a drawer.
Yeah, exactly. I have one, but it's an external.
Yep, I hardly ever use it. Hardly ever. I definitely don't use it to burn CDs to boot Linux machines off of. With one minor exception, I might do that with trying different Linux distros on my old PowerBook.
Why would you? Yeah, unless it's like a really old machine, why would you do anything other than USB where you can fit like five distros on there if you want to? And it is non-destructive.
Yep.
Yes, I know there's DVD rewritables, but...
Yep.
They don't last that long.
Yep. Optical discs are not a part of my life anymore. For anything.
Not even for installs.
I listen to CDs. They sound better than crappy MP3s.
Well, there you go.
Well, it all depends on what you ripped them at or what you ripped them to.
Now a
CD has WAV files. WAVs are uncompressed. They sound better than any compressed format.
But you can
any format.
You can rip to FLAC though, and FLAC's uncompressed too.
Yeah. It's about the same size.
Right, truth.
It's kind of pointless.
Yeah. Now, are you using a CD player, or are you playing them off your computer?
I use a CD player.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got a box of somewhere out in the garage with all my old CDs on them. I don't need it anymore. This is the first time I played any MP3 I ripped on any computer in recent memory, because usually I just fire up like a YouTube Music and I'm done. Yeah, it doesn't have the greatest audio quality, but then it's good enough for me, and... Now, I just wished I could get a pair of those wireless earbuds. I have like three, the two that I use with my phone. Every once in a while, one of them, usually the one I'm not using, the bud will like lose contact with the contacts in there and then power on and then take the audios away from the ones I have plugged into my ears to the ones that are in the case. I might have to break down and buy some of the old school LG Tone band Bluetooth headphones. As much as I like the wireless, I do like the wireless buds, but
I don't know. I'm very pessimistic when it comes to Bluetooth headphones. They stop holding the battery charges, and after a while, it's kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Well, LG has really good battery life on their neckband headsets. But they typically have really shitty drivers on them, so they sound like crap unless you go in and change out the drivers yourself. Then they sound really good.
Sounds like you've done that.
Well, yeah, I have custom headsets on right now. Let's see. This one's using the drivers from the Samsung Level U, which are actually really good, but that's about the only thing that's good on the Samsung Level U's, right, is the drivers. The microphone sucks, and the power sucks, and the setup sucks, and the band breaks easy, but the drivers are awesome.
It's like, I have gotten good comments with the Jabra 3 Elites that I have. Mostly not for phone calls, but mostly for when I use Voxer, which I still use Voxer from time to time. But
yeah, and I'm still a fan of the One More triple drivers. Those sound really good, and
cool.
I've had to find interesting ways to keep them put together. I'm just 3D printing new casings for them now. But the drivers themselves sound really good.
How much does that cost you in material to print the case? Nothing, right? Pretty much nothing.
30 minutes of time. It's such a small amount of filament. I mean, I don't even know how many I could do with a whole roll.
Now, you talk about 3D printing, and one of the things I started to debate doing, if you go into Thingiverse and you search for Stream Deck, there's several plans. In fact, I downloaded one for building your own. The only thing I'm not sure about is, would it work with the code and stuff, because it uses an Arduino?
I saw a couple that were mock-ups, but I didn't see one that was an actual build-your-own Steam Deck.
It's like that, but it doesn't have the actual screens on the keys. It's basically, you can print keycaps.
Oh, okay. Stream Deck. No. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Right. I've actually, you know, made those. They're just little USB keyboards, and yeah, they're really awesome. And there's some that you can get that use the the Arduino Uno, and then there's some that you can get that use the Pi Pico. And then there's one more, the Teensy. I want to say it's a Teensy. That's really common on those builds.
Right.
And yeah, it's a really simple 3D print. If you already have the MX Cherry switches, you're good to go. Or the Cherry Light switches.
Yeah, I can order those.
Yeah.
And that's small enough, or not? It's not small, I should say. It's large enough that I can definitely solder it together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, usually you're soldering directly on the legs, and that's usually the hardest part.
It's this one uses our Arduino Pro Micro.
Yeah. Pro Micro. That's what I was thinking. Not the Uno. The Uno's bigger. The Pro Micro is the tiny one.
Yeah, there. I just put the link to it and thing over.
Let me see if it's one of the ones I've already made. Is
my question on it is well, the guy says, "Hey, I use this with Linux." It's like, well, I want to use this with Windows. Can I do that?
No, this isn't. It's similar, but it's not one of the ones I already made. I made one with less rows. Actually, no, one of them's probably the same size, but I don't have that thing at the top.
Right, because it would be kind of cool. Oh, this actually has an LCD on the top, I guess.
Yeah. Mine didn't.
My ideas for it would be to set it up mostly for, well, I would say mostly for my work laptop, but I would probably set it up such that it'd have a set of keys that would work well on either. Because I would like to do things like, for example, say I've had a couple buttons that I can program that if I press this button, change my background or something in Zoom or something like that, or pause or mute my microphone.
It's
or
really
switch
cool
to the phone. Yeah.
It's really cool that he used a little perf board.
Yeah.
Because I didn't use a perf board. I just soldered direct. And he's using
Actually,
for some
the perf
of them.
Board...
I...
Oh yeah, I see what it is. Okay.
Yeah, it's perf board, not breadboard.
That's fine. That's easy enough. I have when I built my I gotta look and see if I even have it still. I should. When I was in college, I built a 8085A trainer, which essentially is a Intel 8085A chip, and which is an 8-bit chip.
Take some of this guy's keycaps.
Yeah, they look nice, don't they?
Yeah.
And my thoughts on those are I have some transparent filament, and what I may do is use my I actually fired up my i3 mini not too long ago, and it's still printing very, very well. I think if I the default profile in Cura, the latest Cura, always prints a brim. And I think that usually helps with some of the I would get shrinkage on the bottom layers on that one because it doesn't have a heated bed.
Now, what I did instead of using the shielded wire the way he's got it, the one with the plastic shielding around it, is I used the laminated wire. The laminated wire is a lot thinner, but I don't have to worry about stripping it. It just the laminate will melt off when I bring the soldering iron up to it and the peg on the bottom of the switch.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought about building something like that because it'd be a whole lot cheaper than a Stream Deck.
Yeah, because those things are freaking expensive.
I mean, granted, I like the idea of having something that's fully supported and I can just install a driver and have it and reprogram the keys on the fly. If I have to do that to print a new keycap, if I want to change my keycaps and then send a new sketch to the Arduino, I'm all right with that, I guess.
Yeah.
And
the Pro Micro, if you look on Amazon, I think you get 3 of them for like 10 or 15 bucks. It's not expensive.
Cheaper than Pi, so.
Yeah. Well,
I did see.
It does a lot less than a Pi. I mean, it's an Arduino. But it's perfect for this.
Yeah, I have to show you the link. Somebody built a really cool Raspberry Pi setup. I think I shared it last week, I think. Essentially has 3 screens on it.
I don't remember you sharing that last week.
No, I shared it on Facebook last week.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't remember you sharing that on Facebook last week, but I don't pay a whole lot of attention to Facebook until, like, this week.
There it was, Hackster.io. A triple screen Raspberry Pi. It says kids PC, but I don't freaking care. It'd be cool. I love it. And stuff like this is why I want woodworking stuff.
Posted in the Mumble. There we go.
There you
go. Oh, yeah.
Doesn't that look cool?
That looks really cool.
I mean, that would be a really neat little setup. Like, I can, if I build it, I'd probably customize it a little bit, make it maybe a little tighter. But then stick that in, stick some legs on the bottom of it or something.
It looks like it came right out of The Incredibles.
Yeah, it's pretty neat looking. I like it. Although it looks like it uses a Bluetooth keyboard versus a wired keyboard. Yeah. I mean, I'm like,
keyboard,
you're building a case.
Combo.
I'm like, you're building a case. Just drill a freaking hole in it and run the cable back where the Pi is. Well, I did get Alien Bob working on my Slackware install, so I was able to install Protobuf. But apparently the library's still missing. I'll have to research that. I'm in dependency hell is what I'm in.
That's what you get for that, using Slack.
Yep. I remember that was a thing all the time on Linux. It really isn't if you're using a modern distro now. Even Arch wouldn't do that to you.
Sometimes you gotta get a little hands-on there with resolving older packages that you might have laying around that they don't want, overwriting files and stuff.
Yeah.
So you gotta be looking.
We ought to email Patrick Volkerding and see if he would like to come on the show.
Maybe we should do that.
The last time I talked to him was when it was at Southeast Linux Fest and.
Yep.
The wedding girl showed her boobies.
There you go. Joel, never forget.
I'll never forget that because, me and you were like, our eyes are like falling out of our head. And Dave Yates and Patrick are just talking like nothing happened. And I'm like, dude, really?
Yes, those were the days. We gotta wrap this up because I gotta get to bed, and Joe needs to finish his workout.
Yes, he does.
So, all right, everybody, we'll see you in a week. It'd be first show for March. What's that gonna be?
I don't know.
That's gonna be Wednesday the 2nd. So it's gonna be 3/2/22.
Freak! It's already March.
Yeah.
Go figure. Goes fast. All right.
Yeah.
Here are your favorite promos. We'll see you in 7 days. Have at it.
I am short.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I started a new podcast called Libre Quest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg poo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yippee.
Yeah.
You only got a few more days to try the McDonald's hacks.
Well, I will not be trying those.
They look disgusting.
Is that the one with the surf and turf where you take a Big Mac or something and you slam a filet of fish in there?
That's one of them. Then there's a Lancey Air, which has... which is a Big Mac with a fillet of fish and a chicken fillet on it, and no. no. I'm still getting messages from the jury commission. They're saying you don't have to come in. So
I'm like, a good thing.
Can you take my name off the list? Please? And now I'm catching up with everything and like I'm down to 8 cases I got to do for our UAT for the new Slack.
Eight cases? What do you mean? 8 cases of what?
Well, they gave us like about 30 different things to do to test in the new version of Slack. Okay. Before it passes user acceptance testing. Yeah, one nice thing it does have is on the changes, when you're writing a change, instead of having to write out all the stuff about risk and stuff, it actually has a little questionnaire. So you just say, this, yes, no, yes, there you go.
Oh, that's right. You submit tickets through Slack or something, don't you?
Well, that's actually for the LucyBot, which is does some of our automation throughout Python. We'd have been fucked the other day.
Slack was down yesterday.
Yeah, it went down that long, and it was me. I don't know. You know, you use Slack, right?
Yeah.
Okay, with me, it was only certain things. Like I could post, although I would get an error occasionally when I would try to post. But then, if I went, the one thing I kind of live and die with a lot, it's a feature I use a lot, is the thread feature. So I can click that and breeze through all the different threads I'm chatting in.
Right.
Because I have a few hundred of them.
It's too many.
That's the only thing I hate about Slack. And now that I'm a tech lead, I'm in the leadership channels and stuff. And that's even worse.
You know what was weird about the outage yesterday is that my new Mac, which is running, was connected to Slack and was working fine. My old Mac, which was running, lost the connection to Mac and wanted me to re-log in, and it couldn't reload the page. It said can't load the page. So
that's freaking weird.
But my phone worked. So my phone and the new Mac worked, but the old one, I tried everything. I even rebooted it before I realized Slack was having problems. I'm like, what, did something happen? Was it a bad upgrade? I rebooted it, did a bunch of different things. It was the same result, and then I saw other people were having problems, and I was like, oh, not me. Anyway, I gotta stop the recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
So the official announcement went out just a few minutes ago for my candidacy for the Allen ISD school board.
Congratulations.
I got a win. We should have the donations set up by tomorrow. The bank account's all set up for it, but I think we're using AnyDot or something like that.
AnyDot? I never heard of that.
AnyDot. A-N-E-D-O-T.
Oh, AnyDot. I'm not sure I heard of that either. There he is. Speaking of candidacy.
Yeah, I was trying to get Mumble going on Slackware, but...
Uh-oh. What happened?
It was Slackware, and it didn't want to do what it was supposed to.
You know what? Save it for the show.
Well, it's not exactly in the Slack in the regular Slack package repos. So,
Hold on, save it for the because I want to hear about
it. Yeah.
Because I just want
to. I'll save my question then for after the show starts.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't need to do that right now. Ooh, do, do, yeah. I don't know, Joel. What else did you do this week?
So you got her pregnant, huh?
Well, no. No, I didn't. that would be kind of impossible at this point. But I worked on some...
No, save it for the show.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I was just joking. I just wanted to... test the audio. That was all that was for.
Oh, you were checking to see if I got somebody pregnant?
I said Joel, but I think I didn't pronounce the L. Because I asked, what'd you do this week, Joe? Joe. And I just said Joe again. I said Joe, and I meant this, to have him respond in the recording and not saying that you got somebody too. Pregnant, Joe.
Yeah.
So this is... I looked at it twice, and I still didn't remember what it was. This is 944. Damn. Yeah. All right. 944. I guess let's see what's going on in the IRC. I don't see anything yet. I don't see Greybeard chiming in yet. I guess nothing to talk about yet. Woo! All right. 944. It stinks that yesterday's date wasn't today, because yesterday was an awesome date.
Right.
2-22-22?
Yeah.
That was... Although...
All the dates till the end of the month are palindromes.
Yeah, so... The first show of this month was 2-2-22. I noticed that when I was doing the show notes, and I didn't pay attention to it. 2-2-22 was the first Wednesday of this month. Anyway. Yeah, you're right. Palindromes. There we go. Oh, this is 944? 944 episodes of excitement. Got some good stuff tonight. Got two things to talk about. Two bits of technology. Ugh. I better get the box over here so I don't fuck it up trying to talk about what it is. All right. Give me count around, Joel.